Qu'Appelle Valley historical moment. The Cree, Soto, and Assiniboine had initial recorded contact with Europeans through the Hudson's Bay Company, which established its first post in 1670. Over the course of 200 years of fur trading, these First Nations evolved into a well-armed and territorially aggressive alliance known as the Iron Nations because of their adoption of iron technology. In 1857, the Hind Expedition arrived from Canada to assess the potential for agriculture and settlement of the West. Negotiations were successfully concluded with the Hudson's Bay Company in 1869 to end its trade monopoly in return for 300,000 pounds and 1/20th of the land in the Fertile Belt. Under the British Royal Proclamation of 1763, Canada was obligated to enter into treaties with the First Nations prior to any occupation of the land. Treaty 4 ceded 195,000 square kilometers of territory, including the southeast corner of present-day Alberta, most of southern Saskatchewan, and southwest Manitoba. On September 8, 1874, Canada sent Lieutenant Governor of the Northwest Territory, Alexander Morris, Minister of the Interior, David Laird, and retired Hudson's Bay Company factor, William Christie, with an escort of 105 militia, to Fort Qu'Appelle to commence negotiations. The Soto, aware of the dissatisfaction of their tribal kin from Treaties 1, 2, and 3, were hesitant to enter into negotiations. On the other hand, the Plains Cree, led by Loud Voice, had indicated their willingness to hear the commissioners. Charles Pratt, a Cree preacher, served as official translator. While approximately 200,000 had gathered, this represented less than half of the First Nations of the area. The Assiniboine, who were in the midst of hunting buffalo, were not present at all. With Treaty 4 being the first major treaty to be negotiated in the Northwest Territories, the First Nations elected to confront the Crown over the large settlement in money and land that had been given to the Hudson's Bay Company. On September 8, 1874, the first day of talks, the First Nations indicated that they were not yet sufficiently prepared to meet with the commissioners. On the second day, Soto spokesman The Gambler expressed disappointment that the commissioners were not camped with the First Nations and questioned why they chose to stay at the Hudson's Bay Company post. The First Nations requested more time to meet amongst themselves. By the third day, the Soto sent a request to have the meeting moved to their camp, but this idea was rejected. The Soto, who were the more numerous, tried to prevent the Cree from attending the meeting, at one point threatening to cut down the tent of one of their chiefs. This prompted the Cree to ask for the assistance of the militia to maintain peace. Tensions were high as the First Nations debated how to approach the issues that would have such momentous consequences for their future. Lead Crown negotiator Alexander Morris decided to proceed with an address to the Cree, during which he outlined the Queen's promises of bounty and benevolence, including reserves, agricultural provisions, schools, and annuities. Morris frequently mentioned concern about the well-being of children and the unborn, and the treaty he promised would last as long as the sun shines and water flows. The commissioner increased pressure by claiming he could not stay long. On the fourth day, the commissioners agreed to move the meeting tent halfway between the Hudson's Bay Company post and the camp, because the First Nations did not feel free to speak out on the company's property. Grievances about the Hudson's Bay Company were again raised by the Gambler, who claimed, "The company have stolen our land." Morris countered that the Crown had paid compensation to end the company's trading monopoly. This explanation was still not satisfactory, prompting influential Chief Pasqua to demand, "We want that money." On the fifth day, Commissioner Morris requested the response of the First Nations. The Soto continued to demand that the activities of the Hudson's Bay Company be restricted, something that Morris replied he did not have the power to do. As the talks began to fall apart, Loud Voice asked for more to unite the Cree and the Soto. The leader of the Soto, Chief Cote, indicated that he wanted to leave. After Morris cautioned that it would be a long time before another treaty offer would be made, Cote agreed to stay another day. On the following and final day, Cree leader Loud Voice began by stating he thought a treaty would be a good thing. Another spokesman, Camusays, sought reassurances that the Queen's intentions were good, and that, "My child will not be troubled for what you are bringing him." After receiving this assurance, Camusays, speaking on behalf of the Assembly, stated that they were willing to accept the same terms as Treaty 3. That afternoon, September 15, 1874, 13 chiefs placed their X on the treaty. The Treaty 4 signatories were the Chief and First Nation, Kakiishiwe from Ochapaways, Pesqua from Pasqua, Kawezance from Cowessess, Kakinawup from Muskowekan, Kaskitu Masku Masqua from Little Black Bear, Kaneonaskatu from Gordon, Kanaha Chapu from Pipikasis, Ki'i Sikachuk from Daystar, Karakatuse from Kawakatus, Kaki'i Nistaha from Kakawistahau, Chakachas from Ochapaways, Wapi Mustusus from Star Blanket, and Mime from Cote. The written treaty terms: reserves of 1 square mile per every 5 persons, annuity of $25 for chief plus coat and medal, headman $15 annuity, each individual $5 annuity, chief suit of clothing every 3 years, blankets, calicoes, and British flag once, powder, shot, and twine annually $750, per family 2 hoes, a spade, a scythe, an axe, and seed, per 10 families 1 plow, 2 harrows, for the chief oxen, bull, 4 cows, carpenter's tools, 5 handsaws, 5 augers, crosscut saw, pit saw, and grindstone, a school on the reserve, no liquor allowed, hunting, fishing, and trapping rights. This has been a Qu'Appelle Valley Historical Moment on 88.3 Voice of the Valley Radio.